and we will pray. Our Father in heaven, we are so grateful this evening for all the work that you have done for us. And we thank you for gathering each person together here that is able to be here tonight. Thank you for the grace that you've given to them. And now I ask, as we open up this precious book, that you would lead us through it in a manner that would be edifying and teach us of your ways and your will. Amen. We are going into chapter 3 tonight, and we will go ahead and begin with reading the whole chapter. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts, even one thing befalleth them. As the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go unto one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? Now, as I said last week, I don't think that chapter 3 is really diving into new ground tonight over what we already went through in chapter 1 and chapter 2. We're still looking at the same basic absolute fruitlessness that this life has to offer to anybody who would seek to find something worthwhile, something to grab a hold of, something to satisfy them. There's nothing in this life that's going to do it to the extent that the human being is looking for. As we have said, there is some joys in the things of this life. There is some pleasures to be had. But when everything is put on the scale and weighed against what we're looking for and what exists and what we see the human condition to be, we come to the conclusion that there is nothing of any value. Now, when we start chapter 3, I believe that Solomon is continuing on the very same thought pattern here when he says, to everything there is a season. and a time to every purpose under heaven. Have you guys all, did you guys ever work under a boss like I did at one point who was constantly saying, work smarter, not harder? Did you guys ever hear that? You heard that a few times, some of you? You know, there is a point sometimes that you can work smarter instead of harder. But many, 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 many people are seeking to do that on a day-by-day basis when what they are seeking for does not exist. And I have never had the unbearable privilege of getting to serve in the Army, but I have heard people tell stories about what they do when you join the Army. They make you do something, according to what I've been told. They make you, like, move a big, huge pile of dirt with shovel and wheelbarrow across the yard somewhere. And when you get all done moving it, they say, okay, now put it back. Now, this is what Solomon is talking about here in chapter 3. He says, why are we doing this just to undo it again later? Why are we doing something that we can't keep? Why do we gather stones together when we are going to cast them away? Every time you see a building torn down, one time somebody built that building for a purpose, but doesn't serve the purpose anymore. And now we take with our own hands, we should be being productive with our hands, and instead of being productive, we're ripping down the work of somebody else. Why do we do that? Why did that guy ever build that building so that we would have to tear it down? Why did Jason and Joshua have to spend hours and hours getting a trailer out of somebody's backyard yesterday? Why did they ever put that trailer there when it just had to be removed? And this is how Solomon is looking at life. There's a time to be born, he says in verse 2, and a time to die. We don't get this as human beings. We don't understand this. When we are born with a sense of immortality, why do we get born when we can't stay? Why do we work all of our lives when everything that we are going to do we have to lose? Why, if there's a time to die, is there even a time to be born? What is the point of being born if you have to die? And he's asking that through many different ideas here in the verses, and I am not anywhere close to as intelligent and as wise as Solomon was. And I cannot even totally understand the concept of everything that he's saying. This is actually one of the more confusing chapters in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're not going to necessarily put out tonight a full explanation of this chapter. But we're going to get the general concept of where he is going. Because when he gets all done talking about the different things that there's a time for, the very next verse, 9, he says, what profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? What profit are you getting out of the thing that you are laboring for? What profit? Now, let's take this one. This is the this one in verse 2, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. It's something that we can all very easily understand and relate to. In the springtime, talking about season here now, in the springtime, we get a garden ready, and we go out there with seeds, and we work very hard. We hurt our back. We work, we sweat. We possibly get bitten by mosquitoes, and we work hard in something that's not even really fun to do, and we plant a garden. And about 4 months later, we're out there ripping all those plants out of the ground. What profit did we have in planting that garden only to pull up everything that we did just a few months later? Well, Here's what profit we actually got out of it. We got to survive in the body that has to die for one more season. That's what we got. That's all we got. This labor, this travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. In verse 10 he says this. We were exercising ourselves, getting something for ourselves that we cannot keep. My mom was not much of a complainer when I was growing up, but that was one thing that she did complain about. She liked to complain about the fact that she would spend all afternoon long creating a meal that we ate in 5 minutes. What was the point of wasting an afternoon when it was gone in 5 minutes and the next day you acted as though you hadn't eaten it? Want to eat again? And this is what Solomon is looking at in life. It would appear to the person who goes out and plants a garden, when they are harvesting, it would appear that they got a reward for their labor. But when you look at the big picture of life, there wasn't one. Because every single thing that we do is consumed. We do something and it's gone. And we get more and it's gone. And if we do anything that we build, if we build anything that we actually get to keep for a lifetime, then our kids will take it down. Because things just don't last. There's no profit. We never get ahead. The only thing that we do is work, 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 work. And next year we will be at the same place as we are this year. Now, it may actually be slightly that as you go through life, if you are very industrious, that you will increase your possessions as you go. There is some increase as we work hard. But at the end of the day, we die just like the animals die. And we leave behind everything that we made. And so at the end of the day, it's almost, what is the point of gathering anything together? Solomon talks about this later in the book when he says something to the effect that when our goods are increased, so are they increased that eat them. And he says, basically the only thing that those goods, those extra things have for us is that we get to look at them with our eyes. I forget now how the verse says it, but we as goods increase, we build all these things, but all we get to do, we just get to see them. They don't do anything for us. You know, if you have clothes to put on your body, and food to eat, you have the basic two things that God gave to Adam and Eve in the garden. And when God made Adam and Eve in the garden, he gave them what they needed to sustain happiness. Food and clothes. If you have food and clothes, you have got the basics of happiness. And if you add 100,000,000,000 things to that, your happiness is probably not going to increase. It'll probably go down a little bit as you stress out more and more. But you get to look at all those things that you own and you can say, I own that, I own that, I own that, I own that, I own that. I'm not intelligent enough to know these things with my own brain. And this is why the Bible is important to us. Because God tells us things that we don't know ourselves. I used to measure my worth by how many keys I had on my ring. I thought that the more keys you had on your ring, the more important you were. I mean, it wasn't really a true form of measurement, but I did. When I got a key ring, that the keys were so full, the keys would hardly lay flat anymore. They were bunched out, and I had keys to all things all over the place. I thought I must be somewhat special. You want to see my key ring now? I'm learning what's important. I don't care. I don't want things. Now I keep my keys in a drawer. If I need a key to go somewhere, I go open my drawer and I find a key. I have enough keys right now that if I had a key ring in my pocket, it would rip a hole in the bottom. And they would be too heavy for a pocket to hold. But they're in a drawer. But I quit measuring things by stupid stuff like that before. A while ago, actually. So, to everything there is a season and a time. To every purpose under heaven. There's a time to be born, and everything that's born is going to die. That time is coming. There's a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. There's a time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. There's a time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. The list goes on and on and on. If there's anything extra in this passage, which there probably is tons of things that we can learn here, the one thing that we should definitely get out of this is to get in step with God's will. You cannot overturn God's will. We'll get to that later in this chapter. You can't stop God's will. You cannot stop the effects of nature. You can't change these seasons. These seasons are bigger than you. Now, it is in your wisdom to understand those seasons and to be in step with the purposes of God. If your wife dies, it is most definitely a time to weep. It is not a time to bring her back. It is not a time to curse God. It is not a time to blame the doctor. It is not a time to fuss about the horrors of life, but it is a time to weep. That's all. Because there is a time to die. In God's eternal purpose for man, there's a time to die. There's a time to get, and there's a time to lose. Something that I have seen too many Christians don't get the fact that there's a time to lose. There's a time to get facts, too. Solomon says, with all your getting, get understanding. Sometimes the things that you have gotten in life, you should get rid of. You should let them go, because they aren't worth anything. Sometimes it's time to lose, not what we call garbage, but what every person who hasn't gotten it yet might think is the most prized possession in life. Sometimes it's time to lose where your loss is something that would be worth mourning over in man's estimation. I'm not going to go over all these things. We're looking here tonight at the basic general point of what Solomon here is making on this subject. And I will let somebody else preach the sermon on what each one of these things means for you. I'll let someone else preach this later. Because I want to get the big picture here. I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. This is what He gave us. He gave us this life where we're supposed to work for nothing. We're supposed to work so that what we work for gets consumed, so that we work for it again, so it's consumed again, and so that we are constantly ever, ever, ever in work. That's what life is supposed to be. That's how God created it. Now, in verse 11, subject begins to change just a little bit. when he says he hath made everything beautiful in his time. What is Solomon talking about when he says he hath made everything beautiful in his time? Some of the things that he's talking about in these previous verses would not appear in any way to be beautiful. I don't think mourning is that beautiful. I don't think killing is very beautiful. I don't think refraining from embracing is very beautiful when it's your girlfriend you're refraining from. I think there's a lot of things in here that just aren't very beautiful. As I said at the beginning, I don't understand everything that Solomon is going for in this chapter. Some of this stuff in this chapter is way deeper than my mental capacity has had the ability to figure out. But I think that he's going for something that is deeper when he says this. He is going for something that is way deeper than what the physical eyes can discern. And he's writing something that we call the Word of God. I think he's saying something that is beyond our ability to put specifically onto things that we can see and say, that's what he's talking about when he said everything is beautiful. He's not talking about the fact that summer, fall, winter, and spring are beautiful. That is not the subject here of this chapter. He's not talking about the general creation of what he made being beautiful. He's talking about the life that he created, the life that God created and put on earth, the way God made things to work. He made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. This verse here has been a source of controversy to some degree. What does this verse mean? He has set the world in their heart. Now, in the Scriptures, the word that we use in the Scriptures for world is also sometimes translated age or ages. And in the modern translation, some of the modern translations of the Bible where it says he has set the world in their heart, they will translate this, he has set eternity in their heart. I think that the picture here, as far as I'm able to discern here, is relatively clear that what God is saying here is, if you let's just take something that's an opposite first. I want you to imagine that you're a mechanic and you're working on an engine. There's moving parts in that engine. It does something. You inject some things into that engine and it runs. If that engine is working properly, you know exactly what every single thing in it is going to do. There is no deviation. Everything does exactly what it was meant to do. And you can tell what's going to happen when you start it. And you can tell what's going to happen when you feed it. And you can tell what's going to happen when you connect something to it. You know what it does. You know its performance. And the point that Solomon is making in this verse is we don't know the outcome of what God is doing. We can't find out what God is making from the beginning to the end. And I think he is still referring back here to the first 9 verses of the chapter, the first 8 verses of the chapter, when he's talking about the seasons of life. There's a time for this and there's a time for that. And if every person could go to God as a fortune teller and say, God, tell me the story of my life. Tell me what's going to happen to me. And God could say, well, okay, Dan, next year you're going to meet such and such a girl, and and this is what she's going to look like, and you're going to date for two days, and you're going to get married, and a year later she's going to be careless with fire in the house and burn the house down. If God could tell Dan everything that was going to happen in his life for the rest of his life, he could be all ready for it. He could say, well, definitely my house is burning down tomorrow. I'm getting insurance today. He could be prepared for everything that was coming. He could know the day before, this is what I'm expecting tomorrow. We don't get that. We do not get to know how life is going to perform for us. We have to trust God, and He leaves us in a place of absolute reliance on Him, because we don't know tomorrow if we're going to have our job, our wife, our husband, our kids, our house, our friends, our city. We have no idea what we are going to lose tonight in the night. We don't know what we're going to gain either. There's a chance that tomorrow morning when I get up and I walk out my door, I could find a pail of gold at my house. But it is much, much, much more likely that my wife will die tonight than I will find a pail of gold in the morning. The things that we always wish would happen to us are slow in coming, or we have to work really hard for them. And then we lose those things unexpectedly without any interest in losing them. We lose them. If there's anybody here who doesn't like the God who created the world to work this way, you don't have to be a Christian tonight. But your other option is to walk away from God and live in the same world that God made, only without its maker. That's your other option. My suggestion tonight is that you both love and fear the God who created the life that you are living. We find to accept from His hands the good and the evil. We find to trust Him in good days and in bad days. And we let go of the things that we hold on to with all of our might till our knuckles turn white. We let go of those things and let God's way rule. It is one of the biggest mistakes that any Christian will ever make is when you don't trust God enough that you are holding on with all of your might to something He gave you. God has a right to take away everything He gave you. He has a right to take it away. And if God takes it away, it's going to be one of those seasons in your life where it will be a time to weep. It's not going to be one of those seasons that you want to go through, but it's going to be one of those seasons that's going to come. And at that point, we just have to serve God anyway, in spite of the fact that life is rough. You can make life very much rougher for yourself if you want to. If you want to worry all day long about what's coming next, if you want to worry about everybody you know, if you want to worry about everything you own, if you want to worry about everything constantly, you can live here a little bit shorter, okay? You can die a little younger, and then you can go up and ask God about it. But dying a little younger, if you get to heaven, isn't necessarily the worst thing on earth, but you're going to make your life and everybody who knows you miserable. It's not worth it. Let go of the things that God created and let Him run the earth and you be His servant. So He says, He set the world in their heart so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. This next verse then is what our job is. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. That's verse 12. There isn't any good to be found in this life when compared to reality, to eternity, comparing to God. There's nothing good here. But for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. Also, that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor is the gift of God. It's what God gave you. It's what God gave you to enjoy. Eat and drink and enjoy it. Now, remember, there is an attitude among many human beings that have decided that because there is nothing stable on this earth and because life is hard, the best thing for us to do is to give up the work and eat, drink. Eat and drink, play as much as you can without the work. That is not God's formula. We are not following the world that says, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. We're following God who says, let us work and enjoy eating and drinking. Okay, the main part of this puzzle is the work that God gave us, not the pleasure. It is the gift of God. So, verse 14, he says, I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. The things that God has ordained for our lives, the things that God gives to the human race, are things that you cannot change. They're the things that God is doing, he's already got it stamped out. He's on a mission. He's accomplishing something. You can't add to it. You can't take anything from it. Because God is in charge of it. Now, remember, we'll take everything here that we're reading largely as a general picture of this life, and don't take this to the exclusion of other things in the scriptures, okay? We are told to pray and ask God for what we need. We are told that God answers prayer and gives us things that we need. We are told that God hears the cry of the righteous. So this is a general statement about the way life works, not a call to not pray. It's not a call to be a Calvinist, where there is no such thing as change. Actually, Calvinists even believe in prayer. Not sure how, but they do. So, a call, this is not a call not to look to God for the things that we need, but rather it is a general statement of an absolute plan of acceptance of his will. Because what he gives is what you're going to have. Now, verse 15, that which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. I think the basic understanding of this verse is just simply, life isn't going to be better for you later than what you have right now. What you see right now is how it is. Don't look to the future. Don't look to a wife or a husband or a new president or a new job to make things better for you. Because the basic way life is the way it's always going to be. Those of us who find happiness in this life, find it in the way that God made life. We do not find it by getting ahead in life. That's the way the world looks for it. Getting ahead in life. I worked with a guy for about 3 years. Probably used that phrase almost every day. Getting ahead in life. I still keep up with him once in a while. He's not ahead. That was 20 years ago, and he's not ahead. He's the same guy that he was back then. Only back then he was on his first wife. He is now on his third. Back then he had a beautiful house on a lake. He lost it in his first divorce. He now has another beautiful house on a lake. He tried for most of these 20 years to get out of the construction business because it's too hard on the body. He's still in construction. He's not ahead. I bet you anything he's still using the phrase. Get ahead in life. We're not here to get ahead in life. We're here to serve God. Now, if God is pressuring you to do something, then go do it. But do it in this one way. Do it in that whatsoever your hand findeth to do with your might, but not so that your happiness is based on whether or not you have success or not. Let God control what the outcome of your life is, and you just work the work He's given you to do. It's a tough job sometimes to be a person of very hard work. And then have friends who have the opposite attitude. And, you know, there's a certain set of standards you have for your children. And then your friends come over and they bring their little mobs with them. And all of a sudden, everything that you don't let your kids do at all gets done all day long at your house. And you just have to sit by and watch. Those little terrors terrorize your house. And it's just one tiny little example of the way things go. I probably shouldn't talk about this. I have to tell my wife every once in a while. She's nearly perfect, except in this one thing. I have to tell my wife every once in a while, when she's feeling sorry for somebody who doesn't have something in life that she does have, and she wants to go do something for this person, and I look her in the eyes, and I might even have fire in my eyes sometimes, and I tell her, you worked for what you have. They didn't. You're not helping them. I'm sorry. If people want to make different choices in life, they get to have the different outcomes. Now, what does the Bible say about that? The Bible says if you have two coats and your brother doesn't have one, you go give him one. Okay? The Bible does not say if you have two farms and your brother doesn't have one, you give him one. Okay? Your brother can work at McDonald's. He doesn't have to have a farm. Okay? There are some things that are necessities of life that it doesn't matter how somebody didn't get them. If they don't have them, we give them to them. But many, many, many things in life we either do or we don't have based on how hard we worked for them. And if my wife chooses to work 50 hours a week plus homeschool her kids plus do a thousand other things, when somebody else chooses to sit at home and rot and do absolutely nothing, not even take care of the little brats they have at home, it is not our responsibility to share half of everything we get with them. Anyway, that's a side thought. We work, but we give the results of what we get to God. And I had a reason for going down there, because you can turn yourself into one of the most rotten people on earth by protecting the things that are yours. We feel like it is our job to take such good care of these things that we sunk our life into. Let God have it. Just let God have it. If God wants to send somebody to destroy everything that you worked for, you will be in the exact same position as Job was many years ago. When Job said, "The Lord hath given and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." You have to have a complete disconnect from the things that you own to be able to say what Job said. You've got to let go. Let God have your stuff. The actual fact of the matter was, it was the will of God that Job suffered what he suffered. It was the will of God. And for Job to have tried to work against what God did to him, he would have been fighting against the will of God. If God wanted Job to have the things that he had, he could have given them to him. And the fact of the matter was, he did. Twice. He gave Job extreme riches twice. Once, he took them away. He is capable of doing both. Let God have it. Quit holding on to your stuff. It'll make you a sour person. So, verse 16. "And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and for every work." What we're looking at here, there's a time. There's a time for everything. Some of the times that there are not only life and death, but righteousness and unrighteousness. You know, there was a time. Americans just had to suffer through 8 years of a president who does not even know what the word righteousness means. He has no clue what the word righteousness means. It could be that as this country continues to move away from the Word of God, and as we continue to more and more and more to accept sin as good, that we will get to the point that this will not be a good place to live anymore. We might see that with our own eyes. If we don't see it, our kids will, unless we see a revival. We will see this country turn to a place that isn't good to live anymore. There is a time, God says, for everything. And there is going to be a time when the things that are wrong on this earth get judged. That time isn't necessarily now. So you're going to have to put up with seasons on this earth that are seasons of trouble, seasons of persecution, seasons of sin ruling. Seasons of governments that are horrible. But God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. So he says, "I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men that God might manifest them." Manifest, shed light on, shine on, show. God might make us see, that is, the word manifest, that they might see that they themselves are beasts. None of you guys here, sitting in this room, have a problem looking into a fence full of animals, be they chickens or cows or turkeys or whatever you like to eat. And looking at those animals, knowing that you are raising those things for one purpose, they're going to die and get eaten. You have no trouble looking at them that way. And Solomon says, I wish that God would manifest to you guys that you are beasts. You aren't any better than them. As far as what you are doing on this earth, as far as what this earth is concerned, you aren't any better from them. They're going to die, and you're going to die the same way. They will turn back to dust. You will turn back to dust. Verse 19, for that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them. As the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that man hath no preeminence above a beast. For all is vanity. All go unto one place. All are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. But here is the difference. In verse 20, who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? There is a difference. Because man, created in the image of God, is going to go meet God when life is over. The spirit of man goes upward. The spirit of the beast dies with the beast. So, in this chapter, he ends with, wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? Now, we're talking now in relationship to earth when he says these words. If there's nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, we're talking about finding happiness on this earth. We're not talking about the conclusion of the matter when God says the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. Because man on this earth has nothing here that's worth anything. But with God, everything becomes different. Everything becomes different when God gets put into the picture. So in relationship to the earth is all he's saying when he says there's nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his works, for that is his portion. Be happy with the things that you do. Be happy with the food that you have to eat, even if it's just rice. Be happy. Be happy with what God gave you. Be happy. Solomon says, be happy with your wife. How many human beings aren't happy with anything that God gave them? Be happy. And then, as we continue to go through this book over and over and over and over again, the further we go, the more we are going to get introduced to life more in the service of God rather than just as a working person trying to gather food together to eat. And we'll start getting into some more spiritual things as Solomon starts pointing out the things in life that are actually better. The things that are better. How life works. How to live it. How to serve God. There's lots and lots of extremely exciting things in this book that if you take as your life guide will totally change the outcome of your life. But that's all for this evening. So we'll dismiss.